But first to Britain, a country of familiar rituals. The first day of the Lord's Test, the last Sunday at Wimbledon, the changing of the guard at Buckingham Palace. But this week we saw what is fast becoming an almost annual rite, the changing of the Prime Minister outside 10 Downing Street. Sir Keir Starmer is the latest UK PM to bid a tearful farewell. So why did he have to go? And what should we make of Andy Burnham, the Labour politician who'll succeed him? I've been talking to one of Britain's foremost political commentators, Andrew Neil, the former editor of the Sunday Times, the BBC's chief political interrogator for many years, and now the presenter of his own YouTube show, The Andrew Neil Report. Andrew Neil, thanks so much for joining us on Saturday Extra.
Good to be with you.
In many ways, it seems extraordinary that we are talking about Sir Keir Starmer in the past tense, because only 2 years ago, of course, he won the biggest, or certainly one of the biggest landslides in British parliamentary history. In a nutshell, Andrew, what went wrong?
I think there were three things that went wrong. I'll do them very quickly. One was he came to power without a plan, without a blueprint. He had quite rightly analysed the huge problems that Britain faced, particularly economic problems. But his solutions, the policies in his manifesto, were nowhere near matched the scale of the problems that he had outlined. So I think that was one. Second was he was a pretty poor politician. He didn't have a feel for politics. He never quite got rid of his mindset of a human rights lawyer. He saw things in terms of process. He didn't reach out to his own Labour Party. He didn't do the tea rooms in the House of Commons to keep them sweet. His political judgment was poor as well, not just at home, but often at abroad as well, with the Chagos Islands, which was a human rights-driven policy to flog them off or get rid of them to Mauritius. So that didn't stand him in good stead. And the third one I would sum up in two words, Rachel Reeves. That's the name of his Chancellor of the Exchequer, which is what in Britain we call the finance minister. And she came up with two pretty disastrous budgets, which increased taxes and borrowing massively and destroyed her own growth agenda, because he had been elected on getting some growth into the British economy. But she increased taxes by so much, she increased borrowing by so much, which in turn increased interest rates, and it all hit growth. So you add these three things together and we have this unprecedented situation of a man who won by a historic landslide only 2 years ago is now out on his ear.
What I don't quite understand, Andrew, watching from afar, is the level of vitriol against him, that the personal animus. We have football crowds joining in unison to say Sir Keir Starmer is a, and I cannot say the word.
Of course.
There
I know what you're saying, yeah.
Genuine hatred towards him. And that's surprising, because he seems in some ways such a sort of benign and in many ways a banal figure. How do you make sense of that?
I think a banal figure is not a bad way of describing it. And the levels of hatred might be too strong a word, but maybe it isn't. People just didn't like him. And it was partly, I think, to do with the robotic delivery. The voice, I mean, the papers would nickname him the nasal knight, because he had this voice which was very nasal in tone. There was very little emotion. People couldn't warm to him. People couldn't identify with him. They didn't. He was the last person they wanted to have a beer in a pub with. He just didn't speak human. He seemed more like a machine than an individual. Now, I think that explains why people turned against him. Does it explain this almost visceral levels of hatred? No, I don't think it does that. I'm still not sure what the explanation for that is. His U-turns didn't help. He made a lot of U-turns to an extent that he was dizzy. Throughout his career, there's a lot of principles have been put out there and then immediately abandoned. But, you know, we're in an age of social media where everything is amplified, and it may be the social media turned the dislike of this guy whose political feel was poor, who couldn't warm to the British people. It turned a desire to see him off into something much raw, and I would say actually a little bit uglier as well.
Yeah, we're getting used to the sight, aren't we, of the podium being put out there in Downing Street and a Prime Minister tearfully bidding farewell to the nation. The Prime Ministerial churn has drawn comparisons with Italy, but I think, as you said in the week, Giorgio Meloni has been Prime Minister there for 4 years. I mean, that's a kind of dream amount of time for British Prime Ministers at the moment. Australia had this period
David Cameron was the David Cameron. You have to go back to David Cameron, who stood down in 2016 to have a British Prime Minister who was in power for longer than Prime Minister Meloni.
Yeah.
I mean, we are now, we're not London, we don't call London London anymore. We're Rome on the Thames. That's unfair to the Italians because they're a lot more stable than we are. I mean, at one stage, Italy was going through a government a year. The actual figure is a government every 13 months. Well, we have made Italian politics look like an island of stability compared to ourselves.
I used to call Canberra the coup capital of the democratic world. Westminster has certainly become the coup capital of the world.
No question. And even Labour's got it, Nick. I mean, it used to be the Tories were the masters of decapitation, of regicide. They were the ruthless ones, and Labour didn't do it. And now they've done it. This is, in the long history of the Labour Party, well over 100 years, like 130 years now, this is the first Labour Prime Minister to be forcibly removed by his own party. It's never happened before.
Yeah, they don't have the cannibalistic fury of the Australian Labour Party and the British Labour
Party. They may now. They may be learning.
Well, it certainly seems to be changing, and the political culture seems to be changing, Andrew, and I wonder why that is. Andy Burnham will be the fifth Prime Minister in as many years, seven in the last 10. Why is it that British politics has become so unstable?
Seven prime ministers since 2016. I think there are a number of reasons why we're going through prime ministers like a Joseph Saltz. One is Brexit, whether you're for or against it, the Brexit referendum back in 2016, it sucked the life out of British politics. I mean, it took up all the bandwidth. They couldn't cope with anything else. That itself kind of blew British politics up. You had the Brexiteers who won not knowing what to do with their victory, like not even being able to agree on a leader that should do Brexit. It took 3 years before they finally did that. They went through that terrible interregnum of Theresa May, who didn't even believe in Brexit. Then Johnson comes along. He finally does it. You had Remainers who had fought a very lackluster campaign and became bad losers. And tried to undermine the referendum decision. And it all made for a terrible, toxic time from which British politics never quite recovered. Because just as Johnson had won his landslide in 2019 to, quote, get Brexit done, and you think, oh, things will settle down, along comes the pandemic and it blows the system again. And then you have this predilection for getting rid of leaders between elections. Normally, as in Australia, you get rid of leaders at elections. So as you said, Australia does sometimes get rid of them between elections too. That's become a feature of British politics now. It's become the default position. And that has produced, I'm afraid to say, a number of people who have become prime minister and they're just not up to the job. Theresa May, if anybody remembers her now, Boris Johnson, not equipped to be Prime Minister. Liz Truss, she lasted 49 days in what I call the cluster truss, 49 days. And now Keir Starmer. None of these people were prime ministerial material, but the internal politics of their parties made them so, and they were chosen without the British people having a say, and that has made us more unstable as well.
This is Saturday Extra on ABC Radio National, and I'm talking with Andrew Neil, a giant of political journalism in Britain. You were talking about the prime ministerial caliber that has been lacking. What do you make of Andy Burnham? He's going to be coronated as prime minister. There isn't even going to be a leadership election, isn't there? He's been the mayor of Manchester. He's dubbed the king of the north. He's moved south. Is he the guy to stop this rot?
Well, I would like to think so, because it's time the rot was stopped, but I'm not holding my breath, because in a sense, he's been produced by the very system that has produced all these other dutters. You know, Andy Burnham is a decent chap, no question about that. People like him. He is likable. Unlike Keir Starmer, he speaks human. It also helps that he's from the north. He's got a northern accent. He sounds more of the people than Keir Starmer. He's got a humanity and he relates to people. He likes to talk to them. Theresa May hated that. Keir Starmer didn't really like it either. Boris Johnson was more a circus clown than a prime minister. So he's got some personal assets. But I began by telling you that one of the things that undermined Keir Starmer was that he simply wasn't prepared for power. Even though he had been leader of the opposition for quite some time and had around him a whole load of think tanks and policy planners and geeks who come up with what government should govern. Andy Burnham doesn't have that. He's even less well prepared than Keir Starmer for power. You know, he's been mayor of Greater Manchester. It has a budget of about £3 billion, so what, like about $5 billion Australian. He's about to take over a government that has a budget of £1.4 trillion. And much as I'm sure you'd have liked to have it, Greater Manchester does not have a foreign policy. He will be in charge of Britain's nuclear deterrent. He will have to deal with Donald Trump, President Putin, President Macron, Chancellor Merz in Germany, and of course, it's about Mr. Albanese in Australia, though he might be a little bit more friendly than some of the others. He is not well equipped, is not prepared to do this job. So that's why I'm still a little bit concerned. Now, he'll have a honeymoon period. No question about that. People glad to see the back of Keir Starmer. Well, welcome. He's a much better communicator, too. If you haven't got a plan to get Britain back on the road again, that honeymoon will peter out pretty soon. So I think he's got a mountain to climb. It is not going to be easy at all and will not necessarily solve the deep-seated issues that Britain still faces.
Andrew Neil, we have spoken for more than 10 minutes and we have not mentioned the words Nigel Farage. Is Andy Burnham the guy to see off the challenge, the insurgent populist challenge from Nigel Farage?
Well, he saw off reform in Makerfield in that by-election just to the north of Manchester. Makerfield was a constituency. It's a sort of blue-collar constituency. It's not a poor constituency, but it's not particularly affluent or rich one either. It's very much a typical kind of ordinary British constituency. It voted for Brexit quite substantially in the referendum. It did well in the last general election. The Labour still won the seat. It's always been a Labour seat. And in the local elections, which took place just last month in Britain, it voted overwhelmingly for reform again. And yet here is Andy Burnham, didn't just win the by-election, but he won by a considerable majority, 55% of the vote. That's a lot in British politics if you get 55%. Most people win their seats with well under 50% of the vote. So I think Labour's hope is that, look, he saw off reform in Makerfield, he can do it nationally. Now, there's some force to that argument. But Makerfield, to use the Latin phrase, is sui generis. Makerfield was a one-off. That's his home territory. People liked him there. He had a massive personal vote. Whether he can transfer that into a national ability to take on reform, that's a tougher mountain to climb. But he has one thing going for him, and that is the bloom is off reform. The bloom is off Nigel Farage. They've stopped rising in the polls. Indeed, they've started to slip in the polls. Nigel Farage is going into terrible trouble for this £5 million gift he got from a British crypto billionaire based in Thailand. This week he's given a series of interviews. I'm sure ABC's been running them, some of the outlets, in which he became distinctly tetchy. He used to be a genius at doing these kind of broadcast interviews, not in the past week. So it may be the times are propitious for Andy Burnham in the need to take on reform, because reform itself, it may have peaked and it may now be in some decline. We'll see. And of course, if it is in decline, that could also benefit not just Mr. Burnham and Labour. It could benefit the Conservatives too.
Andrew Neil, it has been such fun. Thanks for joining us on Saturday Extra.
Thank you very much. A pleasure.
That was Andrew Neil, the presenter of the Andrew Neil Report on YouTube and one of Britain's most influential journalists, a position he has occupied for many decades.